Welcome to Nui Tech People. Today we've got Jonathan Hooker, who is the CEO of Autonomous. Jonathan's new to Newcastle. He's involved with a few blockchain projects at the moment. He's investor and advisor too, so it's interesting to hear his take on what's happening in the blockchain space. Hope you enjoy this episode. Episode 22 of New Tech People, today with Jonathan Hooker, CEO of Autonomous. Welcome.
Thank you very much, James. Thank you for inviting me.
Autonomous, let's talk about Autonomous. What is Autonomous? People, I don't think many people in Newcastle would know of Autonomous. Mate, give us a quick overview.
Yeah, so we're a consultancy investment firm based out of Sydney. We've invested in a few blockchain projects in 2018. This year we haven't done anything, but yeah, we just kind of look for any project that's empowering Web3, whether that's IoT, AI, blockchain. Yeah, so we just scout out deals, see what's around, and yeah, go to the next step with them.
Nice, man. Nice. How's we? How big's we?
Oh, there's about five of us. So we have a couple of VCs. We've got some tech people. We've got some ops people as well. Just a really, when I stuck the company together, I went out and looked for the most intelligent, great humans that I could find, which were top of their game.
Right.
So we've got some really smart people. I won't go into who they are, but they are. So we've got some really, really lovely people.
Yeah, cool. And you've invested in five companies today?
Yeah, four. We've invested in four. One's kind of on the teetering on the edge at the moment. But one of the best companies that we've invested in is a company called Emanate.
Yep.
They're a music blockchain company based out of Sydney. Where do I start with these guys? They pulled me into a pub. They said, let's have a beer.
Good way to start a conversation.
Yeah. We sat there for about an hour and a half talking about music and talking about the revolution, which is kind of this Web3 revolution that's happening. And they were just, yeah, super switched on. They got a great team. They had a great vision. One of the nice things after I invested in them is they really knew that they needed to, because they got a two-sided marketplace, they needed to get one first before the other. So they did a great partnership with a company called Vampa in the States, which has 500,000 artists. So if they've already got the artists, now it's just the users.
Nice.
The nice thing about their tech, which is launching next month, is they pay artists, the producers, and the STEM creators each the percentage of the amount of money that they should get for the track.
Yeah.
But also they pay them every 6 seconds.
Yeah, nice.
Revolutionary. Can you imagine being paid by Spotify? You don't know how much your music's been played. You might get paid 6 months or a year later. So this real-time payments is revolutionary for the music industry. So yeah, I'm nice. Super passionate about that project. I definitely think they'll be the if you think about it, in the most contracts executed on the blockchain, and the most amount of value movement, I can definitely see them being one of the top in Australia by the end of the year.
Wow. By the end of the year, that's nice. Quick.
Yeah.
Very nice, mate. Very nice. And you've invested around people. That's obviously a smart way about going about it.
Yeah. If they're really nice guys. Yeah, they're all based out of Sydney. Mm-hmm. So they're really approachable. I think they're on the Emanate Discord channel.
Yeah.
So even just go in there, just chat to them. You can just find out they are just super lovely humans. We've got a great ethos in our company. We work with, and we want to invest in good humans, because what's the point of, you know?
Mate, life's too short to put up with, non-quality humans. Let's put it that way.
Well, in our 20s, we go around a wheel, right? And we just try and get further and further. And I think as you get into middle 30s, late 30s, your life needs to be enriching and nurturing, and you know, you want to learn, right? And that only comes around being around great people.
Yeah, man, I completely agree. I think like learning's a big part of what I enjoy. Probably one of the most enjoyable parts of my job is having conversations with people, trying to learn. And the other part is just, mate, being around people that you actually enjoy spending time with, right?
Yeah.
Like life is literally too short
to
be spending either in a job or in a family or in a whatever type of scenario that, mate, people that you don't enjoy being around, like it's Oh, especially at work. You spend too much time at work to be in an environment where you don't enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, this is why I love Web3 so much, because nobody knows anything.
Yeah.
Because realistically, everybody's learning as they're going. It is so complex. Blockchain, AI, IoT, add that to game theory, monetary policy, economics. It all comes to play when we're talking about the new decentralized world that we're going into. So I love it because I'm learning every day, and it's okay to be stupid in this world because nobody knows everything, right?
I completely agree. So I reckon, based on what you've said right now, quite in a position that most people would be like, how the hell do you get into a position like that? I think most people would be quite happy to be sitting in a group of people that enjoy being able to invest in companies that they think are going to grow.
How do
you get to a position like that? Give us a bit of background on who you are, where you've come from.
Okay, so this is a funny story, right? So I was living in Australia, and my dad said you needed to grow up and get a real job and stop flouncing around Australia when I was 22.
Yeah.
So I go back to London, and I knew I wanted to work in tech because I see technology as it's more than itself, right? If you create technology to teach kids to read, you can expand it and suddenly you've got millions of kids using it, right? It's greater than itself. So I got the A to Z in London, all the digital media agencies. I called up all the A's and I said, can I come work for you? They all said no, right? So that took me day one. Next day, I called all the B's and said, can I have a job? And they said no. And that took me 2 days. Anyway, I got to the C, I got to the first one, and the guy said, yeah, cool, you can come work for me, but you have to work for free. And I was like, oh. Anyway, I went to my dad. I said, this company said I can work for them, but they're not going to pay me. So what do I do? He said, well, go work for them. I'll help you out. Anyway, I started to work for them. And it went from there. And a year later, I was actually working for Robbie Bark and Mitch Koch in Seattle for Microsoft. And I was helping them build their PowerPoints for global sales presentations. So I literally sat with them in a room creating their presentation and listening how they talked about the Microsoft business. I did that for 6 months, 3 months for 2 years. And that understanding of business, execution, strategy, how their mindset talks and flows around the business was for a 23-year-old kid now. I loved it. It was amazing. And that's kind of when it all started.
Mate, I completely agree. And this is a slight tangent, but you've just touched on it there. Mate, the advice you could give to young people, obviously, mate, if you can be around people that are intelligent, be around people that are at the top of their game, what you can learn from those people, whether you got to work for free, obviously, it's illegal now in Australia, but there's a lot of value. There's a lot of value in taking, hey, an underpaid job, but to work for a person that's either highly intelligent or in the field that you want to be in, or somebody that's been there, done that.
Yeah, yeah.
And the learnings you get off them.
Just for clarification, he did start paying me about 60 days after, because I complained, and then he started paying me. So I was being paid in America, but I just took a chance.
Yeah.
I turned up every day for that job, an hour and a half before everybody else turned up. That's how keen I was. Yeah. And, I think I was 16 hours a day I was doing while I was working in London.
Yeah.
3 hours of training each side. It was nuts. But, it was a stepping stone to becoming. I always loved business and technology, but it really showed me something, the exponential growth that the world is going to have when I was in Seattle.
Yeah, and it's not hard to stand out as a young person to go. You go a little bit over and above for your role, right? Like Tim Ferriss talks about, his early days in San Fran doing the same sort of thing. Yeah, a low-paying role, going over and above for your role. It's not hard to stand out, and you get noticed really quickly, right?
Absolutely, especially when you've got an English accent and you've got a gap tooth like I have.
Yeah, right.
Shouting down the halls of Microsoft, I would, I'd always be chatting to all the directors and the MDs because I was the outside kid. It was okay that I could be a bit more cheeky than the rest of the staffers. So I had a great time. I was actually based in the Xbox room with all the Xbox social gamers.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the original, all things were the original of Halo and all this. And we used to go and we used to do, the, you know, go in for the day and they just give us like 10 games. So everybody loved working there.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wasn't a gamer, so all my friends had it. Yeah. I was just eating the American food and getting bigger and bigger.
Nice. Mate, where'd you go from there?
Yep. So went out and set up the Hong Kong office from scratch. That was in 2008. Obviously, we had GFC in 2009, September. So it wasn't the easiest task. But what I realized is I've got a lot of grit. So we never gave in. And we, after about 5-6 years, we were working for every bank and most blue chip clients in Hong Kong and China. So we did big deals with Standard Chartered. So the company did videos, apps, bespoke software, games, anything digital we created. We had a team of about 50 or 60. Yeah. We worked for Jardine Matheson, which are one of the biggest conglomerates out there. Really great company. We just did everything and anything for, you know, we did some car launches, we did some, we did lots of IPO presentations. And that's kind of where I really refined my business knowledge again, because we did lots of, I traveled to every European and Asian city doing launching IPOs. So I worked for Patrizio Baratelli, and he's the head of Prada. And we created some new web app technology, which meant instead of people giving out presentations for IPO, they all had it on an iPad, and it was a real time connected. So it had a web socket. So it updated instantly, which is what you need when you've got very sensitive material. Yeah. So we did that all over the world for lots of big clients. And yeah, it was kind of where I kind of learned my craft of digital technology. Nothing phases me in digital anymore, because it's just I'm a bit of a geek and a bit of a mathematical, you know, I can be a bit binary if it sounds a bit weird. Yeah. You know, I can, you know, it is or it isn't, you know, how do we build it? What's the solution? All those kind of things. So I love solving the problems like that in technology.
Yeah, nice. I was in Hong Kong.
Yeah. So then I did a couple of things after it. I built one of the largest education companies, phonicshero.com. It's probably the third most used in Australia for kids.
Yeah, right.
Number one in Hong Kong. It's quite well known in Thailand, Philippines.
What's it do?
Teaches kids to read and spell with phonics.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I can say, but a very famous boy in the UK uses it as well. Yeah. His school as well.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Nice. Are you still involved with that company?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not as much these days. Yeah, you kind of move on as technology moves.
Yeah.
But we built one of the largest gaming platforms for kids on earth. So one of my accolades, I love it. Now it's time to kind of move on to this decentralized world that's kind of appearing.
Yeah, nice. Nice. And then that's brought you back to Newcastle, right?
Yeah, so I was in Sydney for 7 years.
Yeah.
And I just needed a change. And I wanted a place which was a better place for me to grow into the next step. If that sounds okay,
yeah, you know what I mean? Newcastle obviously presents opportunities and challenges from my perspective. Sydney, obviously more going on, probably more talent. Yeah, definitely just greater population, more talent, more opportunity, I would say.
Mm.
Newcastle, obviously it's a step back from it. I guess a speed perspective.
Yep.
And why Newcastle over Sydney then? Where do you see the opportunities here? Or
I think there's we're at this moment in time in technology where we're going to go into an exponential curve, right? If you look at Amazon Go in the States, they're going to have 4,000 stores with no staff, right? And that is going to come to Australia in the next couple of years. There is going to be, and you look at whole of Australia. I mean, I think, I don't know what the statistic is, but about a year ago is half the Australian businesses don't have a website, right? So there's going to be a massive thirst and need for companies to, one, understand, and two, how do they compete with this next, you know, the next step up in technology. So I think when I first arrived here, I thought, I felt hampered a little bit because, you know, there's not as much as Sydney going on. And that's nothing to do with Newcastle not having great minds. It's just population size.
Right? Yeah.
But now I kind of see it as an opportunity to help people understand about this, this decentralized world that's going to come in very quickly. So, yeah, I'm kind of looking at it as an opportunity, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah, nice. And how long have you been in Newcastle?
I have only been here 4.5 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, not that long.
Enjoying the lifestyle?
Yeah, I am. Everybody is absolutely lovely. That's why I don't want to go back to Sydney.
There's a definite difference in regard to this, I guess, the attitudes and people and pace of doing things and and more community.
Yeah.
Definitely more of a community in Newcastle.
Yeah.
Which is one of its greatest strengths, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Mate, obviously the opportunities that come around, it also presents some challenges for you in regard to Newcastle opportunities and things like that.
Mm.
What have you faced so far? What are you thinking about, you know, the challenges that Newcastle is going to present for you?
I think as I just touched on there, I think it's about, personally, I want to grow and learn. And for me, you know, I just want to be around people that want to do that as well, especially that kind of understand this, the technology as well. So yeah, for me, it's just find those people, connect with them and, you know, feed off them for this, you know, for more knowledge.
Nice. Mate, you're sort of a self-professed, not a nerd, but one of the guys that loves technology.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? Where did that technology drive come from back in the days?
Where did that technology, wow. You know what? I never really thought about it, but I think it's because my dad's a geek as well.
Yeah.
You know, he's definitely on the spectrum. And he used to set up like Wi-Fi global satellite WAP systems for people, was a Sun engineer. And I was always asking him, how does it work? Blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I think probably off him is mostly. But one of the nice things is my mum's a nurse. So I have a great combination of, I can be really binary, mathematical, software tech, autistic, but combine it with soft skills, think about it, you know, that kind of real empathy. So I notice I either I cross them over or I flick between the two depending on what needs to happen.
Yeah, it's, I think the ability to have empathy as a technology professional is massive, right? Like
as a human, yeah.
As a human, 100%, as a technology professional, definitely it's that, you know, real understanding of, hey, not technology for technology's sake, but what are we actually trying to do here? How's the user going to use this? How are we helping somebody? And that's often overlooked, I think.
I've never been on a technology project that has not achieved the goals without everybody loving, everybody feeling loved, if that sounds.
Yeah.
They always fail because somebody in the team is not being cared for. I don't want to be kind of fluffy about it, but you really do have to make sure that, you know, you understand why they're there, what they're doing, how best they're going to achieve those goals. And, you know, if everybody can see that happening, you can crush any goals.
Oh, mate, I completely agree. I obviously make my day-to-day jobs recruitment, and a lot of my recruitment is around trying to align motivators, trying to align, hey, are you going to be the right fit for this role? Like, what are you actually looking to achieve? What do you want out of a job? Mm. And making sure, what do you want out of the company, you know, the company you want to work for, and aligning those motivators with the right company. Because if you get those motivators aligned and somebody really keen on what they're actually doing, who they're working for, who are they building a product for? If that all aligns, that the rest of it, you know, the skills can be learned and other things can be, you know, achieved, and there's other things that can be overcome. If you've got the right motivators in place, I think that's such a key to, you know, building a strong team.
I always love when I'm in a team and there's five people in it, because those five people can always compete with a team that has 500 in it. Because if they are motivated in the right way, they think of quicker, faster solutions with quicker, faster technology to get to the end goal. And it always happens. We built a bit of technology that took a company previously that I worked for about 2 years to build. We had a little team, three people. They built it in about 60 days.
Yeah, right.
And that just goes to show that when people are passionate about what they're doing, they're rapid, and rapid is success in technology.
Oh, 100%. Speed to market's massive, right?
Yeah.
Nice. So I guess that's where you come from, is that it's probably through growing up around technology, having that influence from your father.
Yeah.
And then you've gone through that. Did you go through education? So finished school, education, what's that look like?
Yeah, I wasn't really good at school.
Yeah.
Had too much to say at school. So that was good. Obviously, I passed maths and science without even trying, because I just loved it. It was a breeze. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I did all that. That was pretty good. And then I went to university and it was good. I could have tried harder.
What did you do at university?
I did a base media production. It had a bit of technology. It had a bit of media. It was a bit of a cop-out if I think about it.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that style of learning is for me. So it was always going to be a cop-out.
Yeah.
Because I feed off super smart people that are next to me going through, you know, plowing through books that are 1,000 pages long is tedious, to say the least, for me.
Yeah, you're not alone there.
No.
It sounds like the media production, though, sounds like that creative, or the ability to create,
yeah,
has sort of been consistent with you, as you know, you've built businesses after that, even like back when you were creating PowerPoints and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, that building something seems like there's a consistent theme throughout what you've done.
I think I like to try and solve problems,
yeah,
as quickly as possible with a great team. And I'm kind of like, I'm in between the tech guy, the business guy, and the ideas guy. I'm those three that sits across, which I really enjoy, because that's what, you know, a business is all about, right? It's solving, coming up with great ideas and building them and making more revenue for the business.
Yeah, solving problems, right?
Yeah.
And to do that, you need multiple people around you. It's very, very difficult to do that by yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a challenge in its own right,
getting
those right people around you. But it sounds like you've done that a couple of times.
Yeah.
And at the moment, with your current sort of investments, having the right people around you allows you to sort of have the right inputs into who we're going to invest in, what sort of companies.
Yeah.
And then being able to provide those companies advice as well, I imagine.
Yeah, we've done a lot of advice with M&A in the early days. We helped build their, you know, their lean canvases, business plans, help them understand how to execute good partnerships, all that kind of stuff. It doesn't matter what company you're in, whether it's a blockchain company, whether it's real estate. Companies are just about humans, and are they happy, and how to achieve the next step, right?
Yeah.
And once you kind of get down to those basics, anything's really possible, right?
Yeah, for sure. Mate, I think there's not too many people I've definitely had on the podcast or spoke to around Newcastle that
are
genuinely playing in the blockchain space, or genuinely playing in sort of those more advanced technologies, and you put it as a third wave. Mate, talk to me about, you know, your opinion there, your experiences, thoughts going forward.
Yeah, so look, decentralized technology is not going to be, it's not going to be easy. We're not going to go from what we have today to decentralized technology that what the world loves and just works, right? There's going to be a step one, there's going to be 2.5 and then a Web3, right? There's going to be a bit in between, and then we're going to go for decentralized technology. I'm big on economics and monetary policy at the moment, and I'll tell you why. Because as we go into a world where we have more quantitative easing and interest rates get cut, people look for more reward in their assets that they own, right? And when you only get 2% PE ratio on some of the shares that you own, you look to Bitcoin. Now, what that then does is people look, they go down the rabbit hole of, okay, what is a decentralized currency and what is a decentralized token? And then we go down the rabbit hole a bit more about these global socio-economic communities in the cloud. I always have to stall when I say that because I muck it up. But yeah. But that's what we're going into. You know, Facebook has shown us that they corporates can't be trusted with data. And they've also modified our behavior patterns with adverts. They've looked at our data. They've run algorithms to give us something to allow us to have different thought patterns. So that's pretty dangerous, right?
Significantly.
Yeah. So the way I think about it is this problem is now everybody knows about this problem. Like my mum and dad know about, oh yeah, Facebook steals your data. You know, it's just normal, right? Okay, so what are the options? What's the next step? Well, the next step is us owning our data and we allowing technology companies to access that when we choose. And we can only do that with cryptographically secure tokens, which could be our money or our identity. And we need a decentralized protocols for those things to move around the world. So I think of it like now when I look up, I just see lots of value and things moving around, our identity being released, our money being released. We're going into a world where we're going to have sovereign money. We're going to own our own money. We control it. We're going to own our own identity, our data, so we control it. So we're becoming, we're taking back our control, which is great. Think about that. All these technology companies are doing are a little pieces to each of the puzzle through a complete technology stack. So if you think about it, at the bottom we have to identify, secure and validate data. We then have to move that data to somewhere. Then we can have marketplaces of data, which is secure. And then we can have, on top of that, we can have AI, smart contracts, and a thing called autonomous economic agents, which are smart things. So the problem with the world today is what we need is we need to solve lots of simple problems, but on a massive scale, right? How many buses do we send to on one day? Well, if we just connected to how many doors shut that day and how many people on that street, that would make it a lot smarter, right? You can execute insurance contracts in real time. Only pay insurance when your door opens, right? So lots of these things can only happen with blockchain, encryption, and a cryptographically secure token.
How did you come to this, okay, let's call it education, or how did you become educated in this, I guess, newer technologies? Let's say, I'd say you're probably one of the more knowledgeable people out there in and around this. Mate, where are you getting your learnings at the moment? Where is that? Is it reading books? Is it attending a formal education? Is it having discussions with smart people? Where has this come from for you?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, when people say you go down the rabbit hole. It's down the rabbit hole. So what happens is you start with a friend and they ask you some questions and you don't know those answers. And then you upskill yourself and then suddenly you leave it for a while. I actually did this with a friend that owns a big VC firm in Europe. So we sat in a pub in England and we talked about the Bitcoin paper. This was years ago. And he asked me some questions about blockchain. And I was a techie and I didn't know and it annoyed me. So I went away, learned some stuff, went back to him. And then it was probably a year later, I started to ask more and more questions. And the key thing is there is nobody, I read a lot. I say that. I actually podcast. What I do is I take them and I go for long walks along the beach and let the speakers speak it to me because it's complex. Like blockchain, IoT, AI, a decentralized companies are really complex because it's game theory, economics, technology, all into one. So I have to read it quite a few times to really piece together all the parts of what's happening. There's a few, I listen to a lot of economics and monetary podcasts because they're probably the weakest because I never had that education. But with tech, any white paper, Outlier Ventures in Europe's really good. Just read all their research. Anything that I can, any papers basically.
So if you could point people in two or three directions for education, where would you start for our listeners if we could link them up in the show notes?
I would read every word Outlier Ventures has got on research and every company that they've invested in. That would take you 6 months. So just do that and then you'll be ready to rock.
Nice. That's a good starting point, I guess. There'll be a lot of people that you know, would want to upskill or further education around this. So you've obviously been involved with quite a bit.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're in Newcastle now, been here for 4 months.
Yeah.
What's next? What do you tend to get involved with?
I am looking for a company and organization which I can help move them to the next step and be some part of something great. A company that wants to innovate, has lots of problems in their organization and just needs somebody that's come in and get stuff done.
Yeah.
And also help them connect globally with some of the technology that they're going to need to help, you know, scale their business.
Yeah, nice. Oh, well, I don't think you should struggle with that. I think Newcastle, there's a lot of companies starting to really look at newer technologies and how they can transform their businesses, especially some, I guess, more traditional companies that are starting to go, okay,
yeah,
what are we going to look like in the future?
Yeah.
How's technology going to help influence that?
Yeah.
And for a guy like yourself, you've built some companies from the ground up. How do you manage your day? What are the productivity tools do you use? Yeah, how do you operate your time of day?
Well, I've used productivity tools since they started. And then I use this, and then I use this, and then I wanted to use this. I basically just use Trello.
Yeah.
And I keep it simple because that's what life should be. And I organize my life. I actually organize my personal life on Trello as well. Yeah. That's how geeky I am.
Yeah.
Just because I forget things sometimes. It's nice to have things ordered. And there's that, I think when I was younger, I would focus on all about work, but you also have to focus about your own health and mindset as well. So I've got a few other things in there as well.
No, I completely agree. I think if the health and like mental health as well, sleep, everything like that.
Men don't talk about it enough.
No.
That mental health is very important for all humans.
I completely agree. and it's starting to become at least more, definitely more acceptable to talk about.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you, whether it be mental health or just physical health, if all that's not, you know, in order, it's pretty hard to succeed in any form of business world, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Mate, you mentioned a couple of podcasts before.
Yeah.
You're probably more down at monetary or financial perspective at the moment, but from more of a tech perspective, is there any that you enjoy in particular?
On tech?
Yeah.
No.
Any from a financial perspective?
What I find with tech is they're better when they're research.
Yeah.
With podcasts, it's more of a
conversation.
And when you've got a certain amount of time in the day, I don't want to listen to everybody's conversation about something.
Yeah.
If you want that, you just go on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
So with research, with tech, it's always research. With podcasts, it's more kind of financial podcasts. There's a couple, one called Macro Voices and Market Huddle. Those are great because at the moment we're at this real economic cycle of what's going to happen. Are we going to go into a big recession? Da, da, da. And it all plays into the hands of Bitcoin.
Bitcoin. Have you invested?
I have a little bit of Bitcoin, yeah.
Up, down, ride the roller coaster.
Okay, so this, everybody always says that, right? Oh, it's so volatile. Okay, so let's unpack that. We've had 5,000 years of a commodity-based money, right? Gold, silver, goats, cows, right? And then we've gone into 200 years of government-based money where they print money, which devalues money, but you just run around a little wheel and we use it, right?
Yeah.
So over the life cycle of your work, over your working life cycle, you pay taxes, but also they devalue currency. So you're losing twice, right? So it's not great for humans as a whole. But I believe that we're going to go into a math-based monetary policy, which will be Bitcoin over the next 100 years.
You're in it for the long haul.
Everybody should buy some.
Yeah.
I told my dad he should buy some the other day, and he said, don't be stupid.
Nice. If you had to wheel it all back, advice for a younger Jonathan, what's that look like?
When I was a kid, I had these goals, right? And the goals were very binary. They were X, Y, X, Y. And they were very much just in my business life, right? How do I achieve that position? How do I achieve that wealth? You know, that kind of thing, right? And what I've learned over the last couple of years is life should be separated out into a few things. Kindness, compassion, spirituality, and work life, right? They should all be treated the same. And there should be no binary yes and no's on any of those. Did I progress in them? And if yes, that's great. Pat yourself on the back, right? So that's the ultimate goal. And if you kind of live life like that and you're always progressing, you're always winning. But you've got to cover all your bases as a human. Otherwise, everything falls down. Because if you don't address one, the others just go back and back and back and ultimately will cause you pain at a later date.
I like that. I like it a lot. And I agree. I think it's more of that holistic perspective, right?
I've been in enough technology companies when people are like, oh, they're not going to hit deadline and the world's falling apart. The world's not falling apart. The world's colorful and beautiful. You just have to be calm, collected, pragmatic. And that only comes from being a calm and collected person.
I agree. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the easiest way?
Probably just find me on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I am there, Jonathan Hooker.
Yeah.
Ping me a message, add me, connect with me and go from there.
Yeah, cool. Not a worry, mate. Thank you very much for your time.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to this episode. You can find all the show notes at newitechpeople.com.au. We're consistently updating the website with new show notes of new episodes, so you can also catch up with all our backlog of episodes, local tech professionals. Thanks again for listening.